News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 12th of March, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. But first we have to talk about something that, frankly, we want to encourage more of.
Yes, we should, definitely.
We want to encourage more of this. One of our loyal listeners, Wendy,
yep,
from all the way from Chico, California. Big shout out to the folks in Chico, where it's now 8 o'clock in the morning.
7 o'clock?
Something like
Three
that.
3 hours?
3 hours difference.
Yeah, 7 o'clock.
No, 8.
Yeah, 8.
8 o'clock. She was kind enough to send us 2 bags full of oatmeal cookies.
Yeah, well,
are, by the way, phenomenal. They really are. They're delicious. Wendy, with deep, deep thanks,
yes,
from both my heart and my stomach, thank you for the wonderful cookies.
And just to let you know, Wendy, I did not touch a single one of them until I got them here.
Had
to
you
the
known
studio
how good they were going to be, you would have been harder.
And if I had known they were going to be this good, there might have only been 1 bag.
She sent us a beautiful card along
Actually,
with it.
Actually, it was 3 bags for the three of us.
Yeah.
Only 2 bags only made two it to made the studio.
No, she wrapped them up. There was bubble wrap around them.
Yeah, those balloon bags.
Yeah, those little balloon bags. And she sent a lovely note. Wendy, we couldn't possibly be more grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And the rest of you, I don't know what you're waiting for.
Well, all right. Yeah, all they got to do is email us. I'll tell them where to send them. I will make sure that they get up here, like I guaranteed to her.
Yep, our new best friend, Wendy. Thank you. She obviously listens to us on podcast. Even Wham doesn't skip all the way to Chico, California.
Well, could if be the internet, listener, if they, she just clicks on the link, goes to wham1180.com and clicks on the link. She can hear it live.
We're getting up at 8 o'clock in the morning to hear us. All right, before we get to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world. One of our other friends, our even longer distance friend, Bob from Hawaii, Hawaii Bob.
Aloha.
Aloha, Bob, has sent a little news item. There's a set of updates for Microsoft's Windows Media Player. There was a recent security patch. The problem is, of course, that can cause the software to malfunction.
Other than it normally does?
Yeah.
No, that's not a malfunction. That's normal operating.
Yeah, right. So if you've been noticing your Windows Media Player acting strange, the update has caused issues ranging, you know, mostly with the seek, fast rewind, or fast forward. Playback might freeze, even though the status bar shows it's still playing. The playback position slider jumps back to the start of the media file for no apparent reason. So those can occur after stalling one of 3 updates, Microsoft said. One is the latest security fix for Windows Media Player, which was a critical patch released last month, which was needed because there was a huge vulnerability. The other 2 updates were Update Rollup 2 for Windows Media Player, and there was another fix intended to enable DirectX video acceleration on Windows Media video content. Both of those were released late last year. Microsoft didn't say how many users are reporting the trouble, but to fix it, Microsoft suggested a bunch of changes that are on their website. It's real strange, you know, that it took so long for this to actually be acknowledged by them. But if you've been having any time in the last 5 or 6 months, sudden problems with your Windows Media Player.
Well, and that's one of the annoying, well, timing issues, I guess, is that you want to release every update as it comes out because they're important. But some of the updates make things worse, so you want to wait a little bit to see if anyone reports problems.
Right,
so
it's
that trade-off. You know, you got to do them, but you got to wait.
Right. And Microsoft has always said that. That's why they only release things once a month. But those of us who are vulnerable for a month. And that's part of Microsoft's problem, of course, which is that they've got so much stuff in their system.
Too many things, too many irons and too many fires.
Right. And I don't think they share code well amongst themselves. Mm-mm. Because one of the things that has been nice for the open source community is that whenever somebody releases something, you see it, you can check your code and make sure it all works. If there's a problem, you can see immediately where and why there's a problem and fix it.
Well, that's what I still like you that you turned me on to a long time ago. I think it cost me all of $12, and that was Total Recorder.
Yep.
I mean, you can do so many things with Total Recorder. It's unbelievable, whether it's listening to MP3s or whatever.
Yeah.
If I want to literally record something, edit it, well, you can do that too. And
well, I personally, when I'm using my Windows box, which is getting rarer and rarer, I use Winamp to listen to audio, and I use the Twins Media Player to watch video. So I don't even... I may actually have this problem in Windows Media Player, and I just don't know it.
One of the things you have to give Microsoft a little credit for is the change in the way programs have been written over the last 20 years. Probably when Windows was first written, it was all the if-then loops.
Yes.
If someone types this command, you do this result. So
right.
It's very hard to share that type of coding.
Right.
And in the last 10 years or so, the object-oriented programming where someone writes a one little module that does one specific thing, and then you know it works, you never have to debug that module anymore.
Right. You write black boxes and you're done.
Yeah. So their whole rewrite for Longhorn... You know, even XP wasn't that big of a rewrite.
No, wait a minute now. This whole Vista rewrite business.
That's not a rewrite either.
They've already released patches for things they fixed in Windows 2 releases ago. So you cannot tell me that code ever got rewritten.
Well, that's the start from scratch problem, and that makes backward compatibility an issue. And Apple's run into that with their OS X was almost a start from scratch, you know, picking the next OS. But it means all the older software doesn't necessarily work with the new version, and Microsoft, with such a huge user base, you can't really afford to do that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know. It does not seem to me that it's any sort of real rewrite. All right, we'll start with Bill, who's on a cell phone. We're going to start with Bill. Go to the phones and talk to Bill. Bill, welcome.
Thank you.
Are you pulled over by the side of the road?
not exactly.
Hands-free, there we go.
Hands-free, yeah. Exactly. Hopefully my wife is listening to all of this and she can take notes.
Does she know she's supposed to be listening and taking notes?
Well, you just have to talk slowly.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's not going to be good to go home. All right.
Keep driving, Bill. That's our recommendation.
Yeah.
What's your problem?
Okay. A couple of months ago, we switched from, AOL to Netscape.
Yeah.
And ever since, when we try to send a photograph on email, we go in, we browse, we pick it up. It takes forever for it to download into the appropriate world, and then it never sends. It just doesn't go. I don't get it.
Do you also have Norton Antivirus or another antivirus program scanning your outbound email? Because sometimes stalls scanning the email, and then it never gets to send.
And are you And
are you on dial-up or broadband?
Yeah, that's what it's going
to be. Dial-up.
Still dial-up. So that's who's your internet provider now, if you're not using AOL?
Netscape.
The main thing you want to do is talk to the folks at Netscape.
They do their own dial-up now? Oh, in addition to the Netscape browser.
Right. Yeah. One of the things you want to do is talk to the folks at Netscape and see how big a file you're allowed to send. Okay. Many internet service providers limit the size of the biggest file you can send.
Especially on dial-up. Especially on dial-up, because it does take so long.
So maybe that's where the problem lies. Check with them and check maybe with their help desk, because that'll tell you if that's the problem. I suspect it is, but you need to test that, to talk to them about that. Okie doke. Thanks, Bill. Our next caller is George from Penfield, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Okay, fellas. Glenn, I'm a long-time listener.
Thanks.
I've got a... can I mention brand names?
Yeah.
Okay, CanoScan Toolbox, CanoScan Scanner.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring up the toolbox, and at the far left side of the toolbox is the icon for copy.
Mm-hmm.
I click on that icon for copy, and it shuts down the toolbox completely. It turned it right off.
All right, let's ask you a few questions here, basic ones. One, what operating system are you running?
XP.
Okay, and this was working okay right along?
I did change my printer.
From what to what?
From an Epson to an HP.
I knew you were going to say HP.
Oh.
HP communication drivers.
Mm-hmm.
The HP drivers. HP makes really, really great printers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And really, really crappy software.
Yeah, they have that, yeah.
And it generally, there's this HP communication program that sits in the background waiting for you to print,
mm-hmm.
and it eats up a lot of your computer resources.
Mm.
And may be interfering with other programs. Now, if you'd launched the Canon copy program separately, does it work okay, or is it just the toolbox that fails?
Well, I can do other things on it. I can do the mail, I can do the save, and all. I can do those from the toolbox, but it's just the copy that I can't seem to get.
What you might want to try to do, because like Steve was saying, it's eating so many resources, down in the lower right-hand corner, you're going to see an icon there for the HP toolbox that's trying to monitor the printer and what's going on.
Where am I going to see this icon?
Down in the lower right-hand corner on the toolbar.
Okay.
Next to the time and all that.
I don't get any of that on this toolbox.
No, not in the toolbox.
Toolbox on the toolbar.
On the toolbar.
System. You're right, on the main system, the main Windows screen. Yeah.
Okay.
There should be a little HP icon down there somewhere.
Shut it down. And then see if you can do the scan.
Well, and the other way to test is to see if you can do the scan through the HP software. Because what it sounds like is they're warring against
you. You have an HP all-in-one, that could be too.
Yep, exactly. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Let's go!
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about Apple. Their iTunes music and video store will be selling monthly TV show subscriptions. You'll be able to download The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and The Colbert Report on the service. Fans will be able to buy...
The Colbert what?
Report.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
Did you ever watch it? It's The Colbert Report. He doesn't have he doesn't pronounce the T on the end of his name, nor does he pronounce the T at the end of report.
I thought it was always report.
No. Colbert Report.
I'm sorry.
Listen more carefully. Cheese and crackers. And what's wrong with you? If you've got multipass, it's $9.99 for 16 new episodes. You can pay $1.99 per episode.
So you're instead of paying 32, you can pay 10.
Right. So
it's quite a savings.
4 episodes a week. You can download every episode pretty much right after it's been broadcast.
One of the things that Apple's is being quick to point out is it's not a subscription service like Napster or Rhapsody. Where with Napster, if you stop paying your subscription fee, all of the music you've downloaded quits working.
Right.
With Apple's MultiPass, it's a subscription like a magazine subscription. You're prepaying to get everything that you want. Right. So it's
you still got the basic DRM stuff that's still on.
Right. Yeah. You can't burn it to video or to DVD, and it's limited to how many computers it can play
right.
on. But it's yours forever. You own it. You can pay it. Play it forever. So if you pay the $10 for the first month and then don't want to pay another $10 for a second month, the old stuff keeps working, which right. is unlike the Napster subscriptions.
Right, and you can get Desperate Housewives and Lost and all kinds of other stuff there. But they're adding The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. All right, back.
And you have to one of the things is to look at the iTunes front page quite frequently because they often have free TV shows to download, free music to download. So it's pretty cool, some of the free stuff you can get.
Now, of course, that only works if you've got a video iPod.
No, you can watch them on your computer.
Oh, that's
or
true.
Or move them into the iPod.
Right.
They actually, they worked out an interesting deal with, who was it, NBC? Channel 10. The Conviction was a new lawyer TV show coming out. And it premiered on iTunes about 2 weeks before it premiered on television.
Cool.
So they're trying to generate a lot of buzz over a new TV show.
Cool. Now, can I get the entire next season of Battlestar Galactica?
Oh, I hate what they did
in
the season finale. Actually, for anyone watching, you have to remember it was a 90-minute season finale. If you stopped after an hour, you missed a lot of stuff.
Yeah, luckily I did it right off my DVR, so yeah. It caught the whole thing. But
oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
You missed a lot of stuff.
How much TV and movies do you watch in a given week? Seriously.
Me?
Yeah, you. Well, all you guys.
I watch movies mostly while I'm working.
Yeah, but
they're kind of in the background. I stop for the fights.
Online or on DVD?
Oh, no, on DVD.
Yeah, but Sci-Friday, you have to watch.
Yeah, watch Science.
Well, so now, the other thing that it really annoys me more, Stargate comes back in July. Oh, okay, we can wait till July. Galactic doesn't come back until October.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, more important, most importantly, next week starts Doctor Who.
But
and that's
now,
really
see,
important
I'm,
thing.
I'm excited that Sopranos starts tonight again.
See, I don't.
Yeah, it's not your thing.
See, right. I'm showing my age because I like watching the History Channel.
For me, that's
channel.
Like a documentary. Yeah. The Sopranos. It's like
it's cousin
movies.
Vinny. Yeah.
Adult Home Week.
I know all those people. They're my relatives. All right, our next caller is Ron.
No. Not enough time.
What? You made me talk through the entire segment instead of taking a...
I didn't make you do anything, okay?
You are unbelievable.
Oh,
all right, we're blaming
stop
Rob
it.
On this one, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we have Ron and
the
John
news
and
waits
Dave.
For no one, my friend.
The news waits for no one.
That's right.
We're going to be bringing you the news now, which waits for no one. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Unright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton. Rob Jason will be in to read the news. We'll be back with a whole bunch of people on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, at 1180 WHAM, right after the news, which waits for no one.
Here's the best.
Sound Bites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. Okay, we're going back to the phones. We have an off-air question. Apparently, this person actually didn't want to speak on the air. We had an off-air question about podcasting.
No, I'll admit it, that it was my question.
Oh, it is your question.
All right. It is my question. You don't have to lie. I'm not embarrassed.
No, that wasn't a lie. It was an off-air question.
It was an off-air question.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know.
Rob, and we have to take Rob's questions first because he's the guy with
the
buttons.
No, you know what? No,
we've
got people waiting on the phone for like 23 minutes. Let's get back to the phones.
All right. We'll talk about you later. Our next caller is Ron.
Do we have
from
a show
Rochester,
long enough?
New York. Well, yeah, right. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Good morning. I'm getting to be a regular caller here.
That's okay.
I'm running Windows XP Netscape 7.2, and I'm having a problem sending email using the 2 and the carbon copy. And when I send it out, it waits a minute, then I get a Windows, and then it comes on and says scanning and sending. And under the status, it says protocol error. I have no idea what. How to correct this.
What are you using to send the mail?
Netscape 7.2.
I'm thinking it's the antivirus thing again. It's scanning the mail before it sends it.
Yep.
Right. It's scanning it, and then I wait.
You using Norton?
No, I'm using McAfee 9.0. And I can send it individual, but when I send, using the 2 and then carbon copy, 5 copies, nobody is receiving anything. But they are receiving it when I send it individually. And it comes back and...
So if you send only 1 or 2 as a carbon copy, that doesn't work either?
No, it doesn't. It comes back and it gives me the date, who I send it to, the first person, the 2.
Mm-hmm. And when did this start?
Pardon me?
When did this start?
A couple weeks ago. And I have no idea. And then it just says status and it says protocol error.
Doesn't say what protocol or what error?
No. It doesn't say click on anything for information or anything. It just gives a close icon, and that's it. And then I wait, and I hear nothing from anybody, so I know nobody's getting anything because I ask.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
But where the CC?
Now you're using this at home. It's not.
Yes, it's home.
Because
it's a desktop.
Did you make any changes to Netscape?
No, I did not.
What happens if you try to send it to them other than a BC or a CC?
No, just CC. The only thing I changed was that I requested a receipt. That was it.
So if you put all the names in the 2 field, it works, and if you put them in the CC field, it doesn't work.
Well, I know that there's an open LDAP protocol error problem with carbon copies.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't be using LDAP. That's why I'm confused.
So sometimes that could mean that, you know, you can type John Smith in the to field and it looks up John Smith's email address in through a protocol called LDAP. But if you're including the real email address in the
now
field,
that's a question. Are you using the real email address or are you using nicknames?
I'm using the email address they gave me.
Okay,
so you that know, should be okay.
It's all in the address book. And then I went through preferences, and it says, when sending email, look in my address book to compare the addresses. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I believe that is checked.
Uncheck it. If you're actually using the email address and not a nickname?
No nicknames.
If you're actually typing in, you know, somebody at someplace?
Well, it's already in the address book. So
No. Then you're using a nickname to get to that address is what you're saying.
No, I'm not using any nicknames. No nicknames. I have.
What do you actually type into the to line?
Well, when I have my text and I click on the icon for address, I have all the addresses there. And I scroll down to the address and then I click on to. And then I scroll down to another address and I click on CC. And
he's
I do
not,
this for about five times.
So he's not.
Then I hit the OK.
He's not typing any name. He's
I'm not
pulling them all from
name.
The address book.
Yeah.
Right. So everything is already there.
So when you put them all in the to field, it works. But if you put them in the CC field, it doesn't work.
I don't know if it all works in the to, too. But.
Well, that's something to try.
Yeah, you got to try that out.
There shouldn't be any difference between the to and the CC field. The BCC field does things weird and differently. But the to and the CC shouldn't matter. That's very strange.
Tell you what, try putting them in as regular, you know, instead of BCs and CCs, try putting them just as regular recipients and let us know how that works out.
Okay.
You can also try a different email program and see if it's Netscape or your provider or your antivirus.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was going to be my next thing. Try Thunderbird. Because with Netscape 7.2, it doesn't take much. I've had email. Because that's what I use myself, and I've had to redo my email account a couple times because the folders have gotten messed up and the accounts have.
Right. And Netscape 7.2 isn't the latest one, is it?
No, it's 8. But the only reason I haven't gone from 7.2 to 8 is, and this is the one major malfunction in it, is it doesn't do a good job of bringing over your old emails.
See, there you go.
Well, it should be the main purpose of an email program is to read the emails when you're upgrading.
Hello, and
yeah,
it doesn't.
So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was very disappointed in that. So.
All right. Anyway, our next caller is Dave from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
How you doing, gang?
Good. How are you?
I'm in an A-plus class learning how to repair computers.
Mm-hmm.
And as we open them up and look at them, I mean, we're getting to repair some of our own because some of them are broken.
Mm-hmm.
We notice there's a lot of dirt and dust inside a PC that people, you know, most people won't open it because they're afraid of the what's inside the box.
I guarantee you what you're seeing in those isn't
near
what I've seen.
Anyway, what's your question?
Well, denatured alcohol versus maybe alcohol you buy in a store, anti-static vacuums versus non-static vacuums against compressed air, how to clean the computer properly without damaging it.
What
is denatured alcohol and alcohol the same or not?
I don't get anything liquid near the inside. Only because, all right, here's the thing. With more and more of the motherboards, back in the old days, they used to solder a lot of the stuff onto it.
Right.
More and more of the newer systems, especially Pentium 3s on up, are now using more epoxies. Even the layers of your CPU are held together with epoxies.
Right.
And to get in there with, you know, other denatured alcohol or any of these other fluids in that, I'm not a big fan of.
How to get it out then? How to clean
so
it?
So what I usually do on a system that we have a setup at our shop is where I've got a compressor, air compressor.
Right.
It has two inline air filters. So no moisture, you know, can come through this compressor. We take it outside. Usually my neighbors think it's a dust storm happening, but we literally blow them outside and just let the dust go and the birds go wild because they're getting all this free nesting material.
But I'm talking about a personal user that might want to open his computer.
Right. Well, and that's one of the big things, too, is that it's a good idea to vacuum your computer out every couple of months so it doesn't get that bad.
Yeah.
Be very careful about compressed air because it often
condenses.
Thank you. It gets condenses when it comes out, so you get water in your computer. That's very bad. And denatured alcohol just means that they put cleaners in it so you can't drink it anymore.
Right. And then it's not applicable to the tax. Going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, and me, Nick, on Sound Bites.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. Our next caller is John from Penfield, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Morning, guys. Was hoping you could help. I've taken an update to the Windows XP this summer. I think it was Service Pack 2. And suddenly, or coincidentally with that, lost the use of the CD-ROM and the DVD driver. And I've been out searching, trying to manually pull down driver updates, work with Sony. I've got a Sony Vaio, and work with Microsoft, and they point back and forth to each other. But there seems to be no way to get these drivers to run, and because it won't read a CD or the DVD, I can't load back in any of the Windows XP.
Single combo drive, or do you have separate CD and DVD?
Separate CD and DVD.
I can see one of them failing, but not both.
Yeah. Now let's back up a step. Do you see them? Does the BIOS know they're there?
I can see in the device manager it knows that both of them are there.
It's XP update.
Then it's the XP update.
And I've done all the XP updates. I've tried to force them. I've done the automatic updates and pulled those down and installed everything.
Reloading the drivers doesn't help.
It doesn't. It still points back, even when I've manually found the drivers on the web, downloaded them, and pointed to them.
It's a known issue. We've run into this before, and do I know it off the top of my head? I'm lucky I know my own name this week. what it is in the registry, one of the registry entries gets changed that causes any CD-ROM or any optical drive to disappear. Steve's quick looking.
Yeah, I mean, I've searched out on the web, but it's
a Service Pack 2 that messes this up, and
there's a Microsoft article. Let me see if that points to the right problem. Yeah, go into the device manager, remove both devices, reboot, see if it redetects them and reloads the correct driver is one thing to try.
Okay.
But yeah, you might want to...
I've got a Microsoft article on problems with the CD and DVD drives after SP2.
Yeah.
A whole bunch more.
That's the one you want to post. That's the one that we worked on.
A bunch more suggestions.
All right, so what'll happen is Steve, try what he suggested,
and
then Steve will also post a link to the Microsoft article and try those things and let us know.
Excellent.
Because that'll, I'm almost sure, solve the issue. We've had that happen to a number of folks that were trying to... do the updates to SP2 and DV drive disappear.
All right.
Thanks for your help.
Good luck. Pleasure. Thank you. Our next caller is Ernie from Parenton, New York. Welcome, Ernie. What's your question?
Okay. So I've got an older Pentium 3 system that I'm trying to salvage, upgrade to XP. It's got a SCSI hard drive and a SCSI CD-ROM. I reformatted the hard drive, and halfway through the install, I get an installation failed DI386 ASMS error message. The volume for a file has been externally altered so that the open file is no longer valid, followed by one of the components that Windows needs to continue could not be installed. The values for a file has been externally altered so that the open file is no longer valid.
Okay.
Are you using a generic Windows disk or the one that came with the computer?
So this is a generic disk.
And what's the brand name of the computer?
It's I don't know. It's a motherboard I've salvaged.
Okay, but Ernie, here's the thing, though.
Now, I got one more clue.
Well, wait a minute. Wait, before you do that, one other key thing I need to know is you said you wiped the hard drive. Is this a full-blown version of XP or an upgrade?
Full-blown.
All right. Tell you what, we got to take a quick break, but I think I've got a good idea, and I'd like to hear one other thing from you.
Hang on the line. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
If you missed Bob Matthews, you dropped the phone. Now back to Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we've got Ernie from Parenton still on the line. Right, Ernie?
Right.
There you go. And the thing is, particularly if this thing came out of a compact machine.
It did not.
Well, it still sounds like what you need is the SCSI controller driver.
So I had the SCSI CD-ROM and the SCSI driver seems to be built into the motherboard. It's a Super Micro motherboard. And so I put an IDE hard drive in. I did the install. And I can and everything works, except I cannot see the SCSI hard drive.
Right, because you got to get the drivers for that motherboard for the SCSI device that motherboard.
The low-level device driver is built into the SCSI board. The high-level driver that connects it to that just means the motherboard can talk to it. The high-level device driver, which talks to Windows, is the other piece you need, and that's specific to that SCSI controller. So you've either got to get it from the SCSI manufacturer or the motherboard manufacturer.
Well, it's an Adaptec SCSI, so.
And sometimes you have to be, since Adaptec is such a huge SCSI manufacturer, it may be an OEM card and not a retail card.
Right.
And the retail drivers may not work. So you have to know who made the card and bought it from Adaptec.
The SCSI is on board the motherboard.
Right, and you got to go know what
you gotta
chip
go to Super Micro.
It uses.
Right, you got to go to Super Micro with the serial number off that board to get the right driver.
Or just ignore the SCSI.
what flashes on the BIOS is
not important. You have to make contact with Super Micro with the information from that motherboard, and they can give you the right disk. We got to move on.
If they still make it.
I'm sure they have the driver somewhere. Yeah. But now we've been. Rob has been very patient about this whole podcast business. So go ahead.
Well, my other profession that I'm in involves music, radio, and somebody, I keep getting questions about, why don't you podcast your shows or the different shows, the music shows and things like that.
Right.
And I understand that it has to do with licensing and things like that. Explain to me what the issue with podcasting music is.
Well, all right, here's the problem in general. When you are doing show like ours, the ownership of that broadcast belongs to us. We can do whatever we want with it. So we podcast, we simulcast, we beg people on the streets to listen, we do whatever
cookies,
we want.
Right.
Okay, that's fine. The problem when you're doing a music show is you do not own the music.
Right.
The music is owned generally by
record label.
ASCAP. Yeah, record label. And they have certain restrictions on how often you can play and how you can play and what you can do with that music.
So every time a song plays on the radio, the record company gets paid.
Yeah.
Right.
And the organization that handles all that is ASCAP, the Association of something or other.
Often you can get a blanket license for broadcasting, which says we're paying ASCAP X hundreds of thousand dollars a year, whatever the number is. I don't know. I'm making that up. To allow us to broadcast any song under the ASCAP label, under the ASCAP umbrella. And that's fine. But that's a broadcast license.
Right.
If you want to do something.
This is also why a lot of radio stations don't simulcast on the internet because of that.
Because that would require a separate license. Now, many of them will pay for that separate license. So you're doing a kind of a double pay for a double broadcast. And that's fair. They can do that.
Yeah.
But if you podcast it, you are now packaging it as if it were, for example, an album or something, and you have to pay a different that's a different license from ASCAP.
Okay.
Or BMI, or I mean, right. I'm picking on ASCAP, but there's a dozen of them.
Well, it's the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. They're the general group that tracks
right.
who gets
they're,
paid
they're
for
one
what.
Of, they're one of a couple.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Well, now here's a question. You're talking about internet for a second. The FM stations that are part of the cluster here at Clear Channel, they are streaming online, music online. So what's involved in that?
They pay the streaming online license.
But because podcasting is archiving music, that's
right.
a different story altogether.
That has nothing to do with it. Now,
it's a different distribution method.
If I take the stream and I save it to my hard drive, then I'm the one who has to deal with ASCAP and BMI, not the station. That's my problem.
Right.
But if the station podcasts, that what they're saying is they're saving this, they're time shifting it, they may be stripping out commercials. They're creating a separate performance venue.
That's the other half of it.
And they have to pay for that performance venue.
The commercials on commercial radio, the rates that the station pays for commercials are based on the listenership. The actors in the commercials get paid based on how many times the commercial runs. So if you stream a radio station over the internet where the commercial is aired, that's potentially hundreds of millions of people listening to the commercials that the actors want to get paid for.
Right.
So between the music unions and the actors unions, that's really stifled internet radio because all those people want to get paid for their music and their work that's being broadcast.
Right. So it really, the whole deal truly is licensing.
Mm-hmm. Now, does ASCAP and BMI, places like that, have licensing for this kind of thing?
Yes, they do.
What if Joe Schmo on the street wanted to start up his own little podcast, mixing songs together on his home computer and sending them out on podcast?
Hundreds of thousands of people do that.
Right.
Most of them are being sued by ASCAP and BMI.
Really?
Well, and initially,
as they get to each one of them, there, you know,
they don't have the music.
Initially, when there were a lot of internet radio stations doing this, someone did a quick calculation. There's 200 million people listening on the internet. You owe us $1,000 per song. And so that put all the small guys that mixing their own music out of business.
Right. So if you're going to do that, you're either using free music, you're paying ASCAP and BMI, or you're stealing it. Those are your three choices. And any legitimate radio station has to be very wary of things like stealing it. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that's Soundbites right here on 1180 WHAM.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Now, before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was, surprisingly, about online music. Do you think it's priced fairly? 253 of you voted, making it 181 on the all-time hit list. And the choices were absolutely only on iTunes, music should be free, and of course, the Macintosh. So the question, do you think online music is priced fairly? The winner was music should be free, 40% of you, and even 100 votes voted that. 28% of you said absolutely. 19% of you, 49 votes, just said the Macintosh. And 13% of you said only on iTunes. I wonder how many people struggled with the fact that they clicked on the Macintosh, then read the question and realized they should have answered
iTunes.
Only on iTunes. But oh well, too bad. Get over it. This week's question is about Windows One Care. Now, Windows One Care is Windows security packages, antivirus, anti-spyware, PC tuning, backup capabilities. It's going to cost about $50 a year.
Yep.
And security vendors are basically saying, you know, a lot of people have tried it. They seem to like it. That's great. But the security vendors who really look in depth at these things say, yeah, it's kind of not cutting it.
Yeah. Hello. Stick to what you do and do. That's an operating system, not trying to do security. And from day one, I mean, I'm talking back to DOS 2.1. Backup never worked correctly then. And what do they think they're going to get it right now? Uh-huh.
Right. And basically the people at this was at the CeBIT conference in Europe, the security people there were all saying, it's not that big a deal. But you know what? It's not important what everybody else thinks of it. It's important for the people who will buy it. So the question we're asking this week is Windows One Care. I love it. Who cares? I hate it. Who what? And of course, the Macintosh. So far, thank you.
It's just another way for Microsoft to get money out of people.
Right. Yeah. So far, 73 votes. And 52% of you don't even know what Windows One Care is.
Let me ask you a question. Do you put the Mac on everything?
Yeah.
All right.
You have to.
Well, because Mac people, I get hundreds of complaints.
Well, they get mad.
They get mad if they don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. So I just put the Mac.
How many people choose the Mac for everything?
It's averaging about 40 a week. People who just click on the Mac, they don't care. They just want to be able to click on the Mac. It makes them happy. Then they'll go over and put Mac propaganda in.
It's like a cult
thing. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. Well, it's not important enough to just be using a really great operating system. You have to tell everybody else that you're better than they are.
Very few other products enjoy that kind of customer loyalty and customer fanaticism.
Fanaticism is the word I would have used. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm not a fan of Macs. I really don't like how I never get the blue screens, the pop-ups, the viruses, the spyware.
You love those things and
you want
them.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it'd be like a day without air, you know, if I had to wake up and had to clean it
off. You know,
how's
it got to be? Well, I have the same problem under Linux. Every day you get up and it just works. Yeah. Every single day. Well, where's the adventure?
Right. Well, that's it. There's nothing to do.
Exactly.
You don't
have
to worry about files missing or the virus you got overnight or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So far we've got 76 votes. That's the spirit. The 54% of you don't even know what Windows One Care is. 29% of you don't care. 8 people just clicked on the Macintosh already. And 4 people hate it. And 1 person absolutely loves it. And that's good. It's good to know there's somebody out there who loves that. When you're done with that, you'll find a yellow box down below. If you click on the Give Us Your Opinion link, it'll take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Thank you. Well, in fact, that's exactly right, because at the moment, the site seems to be so incredibly busy, it's not returning data. But we'll get that fixed shortly. In the meantime, you'll be able to see, once you do, you'll be able to see who's left messages and add your own. And then when you're done, take a look around at my website and find out all the interesting and cool things that you can do on AskNick.com. And then, of course, come back to Soundbites, where you can join in the forums and you can do all kinds of interesting stuff there. In addition, I think we should talk about our podcast. You know, going back to what we were talking about before about the podcasts, for example, what you forget is that podcasting is international. And so, in fact, is streaming over the internet.
Yep.
Now, for example, we have listeners in Italy, in Germany, in Australia, in France, in Canada, in the UK. We have 39 people listening to this show in New Zealand. I don't even know where they came from. God bless each and every one of you. If one of you is Peter Jackson, I really want to be in your next movie.
Framper is getting quite a few hits.
Yes, but my point is they all have different laws. And if it's us, if it's our voice, we can do what we want. We just send it out there, not a problem. But if you're doing music,
it's the law of this land, right?
It's the law of wherever it's being packaged for. It's wherever it's being packaged for dissemination.
And the iTunes Music Store isn't available in Canada yet,
right? Right,
because of the local laws,
right? And so the what they're saying is, no, you've got to follow our laws because podcasting is now packaged for us. So it gets way more complex.
But you cut the commercials out and everything like that.
Even so, if you're using somebody else's music, you have to pay, you know, ASCAP in New Zealand, a separate fee from ASCAP in the United States, whatever they call ASCAP in New Zealand.
Right, and it's real. What's interesting is,
and it's not an either or; it's a both.
I've been looking on ASCAP's website, and it's interesting, the stuff that you wouldn't think has to be licensed, but makes sense when you think about it. Mm-hmm. Restaurant music, elevator music, bus terminal music.
Yep.
Anywhere there's music playing, whoever wrote that music has to get paid.
Well, it's just like you're not supposed to play play the radio for a crowd of people in a restaurant or something
right.
You're supposed to pay.
Right.
And that's why a lot of these places do the Muzak service, because it includes all of the stuff.
Paid already, right.
Yep.
Now, you can do things like, for example, there are a number of free music sites. Magnatune is one at magnatune.com. I believe that's already on our list somewhere. Mm-hmm. Magnatune, you can listen to all the music you want for free. If you want to buy it, they'll sell it to you. You can listen for free. You can do whatever you want. It says, we're a record label, but we're not evil. Now, I haven't really looked at the site, but I suspect it would be okay if you played their music in your store. You know, streamed their stuff. I don't know, but you could take a look.
It's just so bizarre. I mean, obviously, there's people breaking the laws all over the world doing this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, it's just really weird.
And so many times what you find out is that it's the record company that really is trying to stop this. The artists are saying, that's why we wrote it. We want people to hear it, but
we want to get paid for what we wrote too.
Right.
And it's one of the things that ASCAP points out right on your main website too. There's 10 million people writing songs, and then there's 100,000 record companies. So each one of those 10 million people writing a song would have to go to the hundreds of thousands of radio stations and music outlets around the country and make sure they're getting paid right. So that's why we have these national organizations like ASCAP and the RIAA and whatnot.
One other thing about our website.
Yeah.
I wound up getting two emails this morning in the Squirrel Mail account asking where my tips were. Evidently, they like reading them each week.
Sure.
I apologize. I didn't get anything up this week. I was kind of busy doing other things. But by next week, I promise I will make up for this past week. Because I'm really happy to say, though, there are a lot of folks that like the tips and everything else, find them useful, which only, you know, keeps me going and doing them. But I apologize for not getting it up this past week, and I'll get a couple up though.
Well, we'll forgive you.
Thank you.
All right. Back to the phones now. We're going to talk to Janice from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Janice. What's your question?
My question is, I have a desktop and a laptop computer, and whenever I receive a incoming telephone call that I answer, and my wireless connection will go out on my laptop, and when I hang up, it comes back.
Yep.
You have a 2.4 gigahertz portable phone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. The wireless internet is 2.4 gigahertz. You can use one or the other, but not both.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the deal here is this. There is a very small unlicensed band that the FCC lets anybody use for anything they want.
Okay.
That's where wireless is. It's also where your phone happens to be.
You can sometimes alleviate the problem by changing channels. Your wireless router has a channel on it. There's 14 channels available. So set one of the devices to a low channel and one of the other devices to a high channel and see if they'll work without interference.
Right. So on your phone, for example, you may find on the back a switch that lets you change the channel. Everything, for some reason, defaults to 6. I don't know why. Well, it's right in the middle of the band.
Yeah.
And it's probably the best signal. I found that on my wife's laptop. The antenna is cut for 6 for that bandwidth.
Yep.
And if you go lower or higher, you get a worse of a signal.
Right. So the other option is to use the 900 megahertz phones or the 5 gigahertz phones.
Right.
Oh, okay. So, okay, 5. Now, the thing is, what's weird about it is it's only been going on for maybe 4 to 6 weeks, and I've had the laptop with the wireless connection hooked up since December.
Have you moved anything?
No. That's what's really weird.
Portable phones will change channels based on what they see interference. So
from
apparently,
time to time.
Your neighbor might have a similar portable phone, and the radios don't stop at the end of your wall. They go into the neighbor's house, too. So if a neighbor gets a similar phone on the same frequency, the two phones will adjust each other so you don't hear their calls.
Yep.
And maybe your phone has now adjusted itself down lower so it's closer in channel to your wireless router.
Right.
Okay. So it's not like a physical location. It's a channel location.
Generally not.
Also physical, too.
Yeah, physical if your relationship cell phone, to the other phones.
Yeah, if your phone base station is sitting right next to your wireless base station, then the interference is even worse.
Okay. All right, it's just kind of weird. And I called the cable company, and they didn't have a clue. I called the phone company. They didn't have a clue. So one other quick thing is sometimes my the mouse, when I'm doing something, like if I'm playing a game, it will stall or it won't move, you know, the little touchpad. And then if I right-click, you know, go off of the thing, pull it off, which takes a while, and then right-click it, it goes back. What would make it stall like that where you can't?
This is on the laptop?
Yeah. No. Yes, on the laptop.
Static often will do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's not much you can do that. Yeah. I always tell people, get rid of your rugs and compute naked. But if assuming that's not an option, then some sort of static.
A grounded anti-static mat.
Right.
Oh, okay. So if I sit in a leather chair instead of on an upholstered sofa, it would be better. I have no rugs in the room that the laptop's in.
Oh, okay. Right. And it's usually worse in the winter than the summer because static is worse, blah, 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 blah. You know the whole story.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Houses are closed up.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help.
No, thank you, Janice. Appreciate it. That's a big thing.
Let me ask you a question.
Oh, here we go.
No, that's before you get into that. All that right. Goes back to what we were mentioning earlier about cleaning your computer. When I mentioned vacuuming your computer out, don't take the covers off.
Yeah.
You know, stick the vacuum suction hose up to the vents on the computer, the front vents, side vents, rear vents, especially in the rear power supply.
Yeah. Don't ever take your vacuum cleaner to the
inside
of your computer.
I don't encourage it. And this show, we've never on this show told folks, you know, literally take the covers off and do this and that.
Never do that.
Yeah, unless you're really comfortable and have done it before and have some training and knowledge about it, because I'd hate to fry some listener.
Yeah, right.
And so vacuum your computer out that way through the covers every couple of months, then it doesn't accumulate on the inside. Don't put your computer on the floor, wedged up against the back of the desk where there's no place for the dust to go out. Yeah, leave it on top of the desk. Make sure there's a good, 12 inches around it so the air can circulate and the dust won't accumulate as bad.
Right. Definitely do not take the case off and run the vacuum inside the system. That would be, what's the word I'm looking for?
Bad.
Well,
see, that's the static grounding is not to protect you. It's to protect the computer.
Yeah, we don't care about you. You get a little shock, it's no big deal. A computer gets a little shock, it's a big
deal.
Yeah, it's essentially huge to the computer. So you really want to be very, very careful with that. And with laptops, it's hard because you carry them around, you use them in places that aren't normally where you would expect. As Janice said, she's often sitting on a couch when she uses it, and it depends. Maybe you're wearing slacks or you're wearing nylons or whatever, and you just move your legs in the normal course of sitting and moving around, and you generate static, and it's bad for the computer.
Now, Rob's on the floor in there. They've done that on MythBusters. There's a very common myth about gasoline and gas stations that a static spark while you're filling your gas tank will blow up the gas tank. And literal studies have shown that it's mostly young women that this happens to because they get in and out of the car
while
they're filling the tank, building up static. Older people grab onto the door frame of the car as they're getting out, grounding themselves to the door, and younger men stay outside and pump the handle. So it's mostly younger women this happens to, and it does happen, and it's because of the static buildup. And so MythBusters, a really cool show on Discovery Channel, took a pair of ladies' pantyhose and made an automatic, rub them together, generate static, and they could blow up some Lexan compartments. Really cool.
Yeah.
So in the past 5 minutes or so, you've talked about people computing in nothing.
Yeah.
Or just nylons.
No, we didn't say just nylons, but you're wearing a skirt, and you've got nylons.
I don't wear a skirt when I type
not
on
you.
A
so let's go back to Janice, shall we?
Right, a wool skirt with nylon pantyhose. There you go.
And there you go. Or you're wearing wool pants or whatever. The point is you wear things that can generate static up against fabric like on a couch, and since you're using she even admitted she was using her laptop on the couch, that's possibly where this static is building up, and that's why you want to be more careful.
I just wanted to ensure that the next time I send you an email, the vision doesn't go through my head of you in a skirt and stockings typing to me on your computer.
I don't know whether to laugh or vomit.
Yeah. I have great gams, however, and I look good in a skirt.
that I can verify.
We're just out of control today, but you know what?
Well, don't forget, I spent 20 years as a professional actor, and I did a show where I played an 80-year-old woman. I was wearing a dress.
I
look darn good in a dress, I have to say it. We're going to take a quick break while Rob scrubs his eyes.
Yeah, but your wife gets jealous because you look better.
Yes, well, yeah. But I'll be back. We'll all be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. I'm wearing pants today on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Now, I do want to say we were talking earlier about podcasting and all of that stuff. I did notice that Magnatune wants people to podcast their music. They're happy. They're
now, what happy. Is Magnatune?
Magnatune is a free music site. You can listen to the music free. You can podcast the music free. If you want to buy the music, you can pay as little as $5 for an entire CD.
Oh, I see. So it's kind of like a legal music sharing kind of deal.
Well, they're about 500 complete albums, and they're not talking about 30-second snippets. It's the whole album in MP3 format.
Right.
Download an album for $5, or you pick the price, really. You can buy a real CD. You can license the music for commercial use. There's no copy protection. They want you to podcast it. All of the artists in here, they do classical, electronica, jazz, blues, metal, punk, new age, rock, world, and a bunch of, you know, smaller genres. So, and it's all there, and it's all, it's not exactly free in the sense that you really should pay for it, but you can give copies to your friends. They have, it's an incredibly nice licensing arrangement. You should take a look at that. It's pretty nifty.
One of the other things I wanted to drift back to, though, for a minute, we were talking about maintenance and cleaning machines and everything else. One thing that I'm seeing a lot coming into our shop, especially since, you know, there's a big trend right now towards the laptops. People want the portability and everything else. And one thing that we're seeing are folks have their laptops plugged in. And who knows for what reason they might realize all of a sudden they're late for a meeting or anything else. They quick close the computer and go to take off, realizing too late that they left the laptop plugged in.
Oh! Power cord, mouse, printer cord, network cord, anything like that.
And it snaps the power connector. Now, when you do that, folks, that can be quite expensive to replace because basically you've got to rip that laptop down to the day it was built. The motherboard has to come out of it, and we have to solder a whole new connector on it and put it literally all back together with over 100 screws because we set it out on a big piece of white paper and mark off the various areas.
Because every laptop is different.
And each group of screws has to go back into a certain area. They're all different sizes.
So what Dave is saying is it ain't cheap to do this.
We got little button bins at Joann Fabric.
Yeah.
To store our screws, and they work really, really good.
Yeah, we got that. That's great if you're just taking a regular case apart.
Yeah.
But when it comes to laptop, we found it easier just to map it out on a piece of paper.
And hope no one tips the table.
No, everybody. Yeah. That's one thing everybody knows in the shop. Stay away from that piece.
Well, area. That's even if considering if you can unsolder the old connector and resolder it. A lot of these motherboards are you know, three or four layers thick and are almost impossible to do that with.
With many, so it's very hard.
So it becomes replacing the entire logic board.
Now you were saying the new Macs, on the other hand, the new Mac laptops.
Yeah, the MacBook Pro is using a magnetic power lock, a maglock connector, so that when you do pick the computer up or you trip over the power cord, it comes undone really easily.
Because it's held on magnetically as opposed to plugging in anywhere.
Right, so it comes off really easy when you trip over it and stays connected magnetically when you need the power.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. We're going to talk to Carolyn from Greece, New York. Thank you for being so patient, Carolyn. What's your question?
We just recently changed from a CRT monitor to a 17-inch LCD monitor.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Ever since we did that, we've had a couple of problems that we didn't have before, so we're kind of suspicious of it. First of all, we get kind of a dotted line going across the screen about a quarter of a way down the screen. Comes and goes. So I'm not sure what's causing that.
One of the big differences between CRTs and LCDs is the resolution settings.
Okay.
With a CRT, you can pick pretty much any resolution you want, you know, 1024 by 768, 1280 by 1540, you know, whatever you like.
Yaddy, yaddy, yaddy.
With an LCD, there's one specific resolution that the LCD was designed to run at.
Okay.
And you can sometimes pick other resolutions, but It does, no guarantee. Right, there's no guarantee, and it does pixel multiplying. So for example, on a 17-inch, it's maybe 1024 by 768 of actual pixels. There's actually 1,000 pixels across. And if you run it at a different resolution, it has to multiply those pixels together. So it's using two real pixels to make a fake pixel on screen. So things can look fuzzier, and they're not running exactly the way the monitor was designed to be run. So if you find the native resolution, it's often called, in the monitor manual, and make sure you're running it at that resolution. And then that goes back to what resolutions your video card supports. If the video card doesn't support the right resolution and frequency that your monitor does,
right,
then you run into different problems like lines and ghosting on the screen.
Right.
Okay. Okay. And now the other problem we're having is we use Firefox as a web browser, and when you use it for maybe half an hour or so, now it's starting to freeze up, and it never did this before. Now, would that still be related to the resolution?
That's unlikely, but it could be
the video drivers.
A driver problem. When you changed from the CRT to the LCD, did you also change the video card?
No, we did not. And it is probably...
Did you double-check your energy saving settings? In other words, if you go into the control panel and under energy saving... it might have a trouble as far as trying to blank that monitor out. So change it to none. Because usually what I tell folks is don't worry about these stupid screensavers. If you're not going to be using the computer, just turn the monitor off. Walk away from it, turn the monitor off, and don't try using those screensavers or energy-saving settings.
The LCD uses so much less energy to begin with. That's right. A major decision in using them.
The important thing to remember, though, is if you're using Linux, you can still have bouncing cows.
Yep.
It's essentially cows on trampolines.
Ooh.
It's just, you have to see it to believe it.
Do you remember this one? Name the company. Flying Toasters.
Dagnabbit. I have Flying Toasters under Linux.
Yep.
Can't think of the name.
The software was after dark. The company was Berkeley Systems.
Yep. Right, Berkeley Systems, right. All right, our next caller is Don from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Good afternoon, everyone. Got a question about deleting temporary internet files.
Mm-hmm.
I have two systems. One's a brand new Dell with Windows XP, and my older system's about a five-year-old Toyota with still has Windows 98 on it.
Okay.
When I do Nick's Security Tangle religiously, I have McAfee online,
mm-hmm.
and when I go to delete the temporary internet files,
mm-hmm.
I do it either one of two ways, through Internet Explorer, or I actually go to the temporary internet folder itself and mm-hmm. delete everything.
Yep.
Well, everything's been working fine up until a couple weeks ago, and then I began noticing that it's taking longer and longer for the Stinger and the McAfee to run on my older computer. And normally I start this thing and walk away and then come back and do the next step.
Right.
But what I noticed when I sat there and watched is as the Stinger was going through checking things, I was seeing temporary internet files on the screen that it was checking that supposedly I had deleted. So I kept looking, and I actually found them by going into using the Find.
Mm-hmm.
And I found there was like 30 temporary internet folders that were full, like thousands.
And they're
of
not
files.
Where you expected them to be.
They're actually they show as being part of the tree off the temporary internet folder.
Right, but you never saw them before.
No, because it was an IE, a content.ie5.
Right, right.
Now,
they're hidden. I'm not even going to get into why, but
yeah.
Microsoft hid a lot of the stuff that you download.
So what I did was, using this tree, I was able to go in and actually delete them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pain because it takes so long to do this.
Yeah.
Once I did that, now it goes through the system in like 5 minutes.
Right. Yep. Let me suggest you stop using Internet Explorer first.
Yes.
And go to Firefox. That's first. But if you're gonna stick with IE, you're going to continue to have this problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other way to access those folders?
Well, delete the entire top-level temporary internet folders. And do it often enough so they don't accumulate.
Right, but that's a pain, too, because then you got to get rid of them, you got to recreate them, you got to make sure that Windows didn't notice you had deleted them and changed them where it saves the internet. It's way,
but
just stop using Internet Explorer.
Ooh.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's our suggestion. But, yeah, you're going to have to keep doing that if you're going to keep using Internet Explorer. Our next caller is Chris from Cohocton, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Welcome. Thanks for your show. Got a couple quick ones. First one is a program popped up on my screen. It says Zango, Z-A-N-G-O.
Yeah.
I don't know what the heck it is, and I'm almost afraid to touch it.
Well, you should be. Have you?
It's one of those gaming things. Okay. Some website you went to subscribes to the Zango internet gaming service.
Okay.
But most of those internet gaming things come with tons of spyware.
Yeah, that was my guess, too.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was real quick, too. When I pop up on my device manager, I've got 4 unknown devices shown. If I pop up on the first one, it says under type. It doesn't tell you what the device is, but on type it tells you it's a 1394 bus controller.
Yep. Yeah.
No manufacturer and no hardware version.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for your IEEE.
Okay. It's FireWire's Apple's trade name.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. The second one was unknown device, no type, no manufacturer, and
yeah. What happens a lot under Windows? You're running XP, did you say?
I'm sorry, 98.
Oh, even more. Under 98, there are a lot of devices that just aren't known to it. Okay. There were a lot of devices that 98 didn't recognize, couldn't run with. So they're on your system. That's great. You can't use them under 98.
Okay.
Unless you can find a 98 driver for it.
If you can find if the company that made that device also made a driver for 98, you win. But natively, 98 doesn't recognize any of those devices.
We see that happening with newer computers that you want to run 98 on. It's got FireWire on it. It's got USB 2 on it. It's got SATA drive controllers on it. 98 just can't work with those things.
Okay.
From now until, I'd say, to August, we should probably start encouraging folks more and more that if they have a 98 machine, to seriously start looking into their budget to upgrade those systems to at least Windows XP.
Okay.
Because 98 is technically dead.
Yep.
And once Vista comes out, Bill Gates is going to turn to you and say, Windows what?
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, I mean, there is still some support, luckily, because there is such a wide base.
Right.
But I think the pressure is going to be on more and more now through the summer as he's gearing up to get Vista out there, because the platform that he's creating for Vista is definitely going to blow anybody's budget away, you know, as far as cost initially. So, you know, if you can really get into some of these good deals right now with the current XP boxes, at least you're going to be not a cutting edge,
right?
But you're going to be at least up there to still do stuff and get updates and everything else. I encourage it greatly for folks to do that.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, a couple of things we really should talk about. Those of you who upgraded McAfee's security tools on Friday may have noticed that it thought Excel was a virus.
Isn't it?
Word
more likely.
Yeah, there was a little small Excel.exe and Graph.exe, two Microsoft Office components, Adobe's Update Manager, and a couple of others were all flagged as viruses. It's been fixed. It's been fixed. So if you had that problem, re-update. I hope you were smart enough to not delete Excel. Re-update and you'll be good to go. It was just a glitch in their software, and there you are. Again, before we get back to the phones, two quick things about laptops. Again, talking about the CeBIT Fair, which is a technology fair that was in Hanover, Germany last week. There's a Taiwanese high-tech firm called Antig, and they are saying fuel cells should be on the shelves of computer shops for laptops by early 2007. You'd be able to they're methanol-using little devices, and you should be able to keep a laptop going for up to 9 hours. The fuel cells can be recharged by topping them up with methanol from a cartridge. They fit into the media bay, usually the location of the CD or DVD drive. So that's a pretty nifty thing. You'll be able to run your laptop for 9 hours, marathon sessions with World of Warcraft are at your fingertips. I mean, excuse me, marathon sessions doing your job will be at your fingertips shortly, if not soon. And also about laptops, Samsung just showed high-capacity versions of their solid-state disk. Basically, it's flash memory-based hard drives. The thumb drives, the little USB drives, those are all flash memory-based. And now they're making them in the size up to 16 gigabytes. 32 gigabytes.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's small because I've seen them 40.
Right, 32 gigabytes in the size of a 1.8-inch hard drive. So that's about the size of the hard drive, maybe half the size of the hard drive you get. The nice thing is that they're way fast. They are way fast.
No moving parts.
Boot up of an XP machine took about 18 seconds, as opposed to maybe half a minute or a little longer for a disk-based machine. They're much more durable because they can withstand a lot more shock. Yep. If the laptop gets dropped, you'll break the screen, but you won't lose your data.
Like Steve said, no moving parts, no actuators, no platters.
The big problem with them is they're very expensive.
Like anything else.
They'll come down.
Yeah.
Should also
They're about $30 a gigabyte right now. They used to be about 55 gigabytes, so it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
Couple that with the 9-hour fuel cell, and that's 9 hours of spinning a hard drive.
You watch. Make a note of the price right now.
Yep.
And see what the price is going to be around Christmas time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I guarantee it's going to be at least half of that.
Sure.
Half of that.
Sure. We're going to be seeing that stuff come down shortly.
The first couple of Origami devices were shown at CeBIT as well.
Right.
It's bigger than a PDA, smaller than a laptop, and first reactions are, eh.
Yeah, basically, yeah, so what?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, basically, so what? All right, our next caller is John from Hilton, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Yes, I'm running Windows XP, and I've had Panda Platinum security on it, antivirus.
Yeah.
I'm trying to install McAfee Security Suite, and I thought I deleted the Panda program, but the McAfee Suite keeps telling me it's still detecting it, and I'm kind of limited, and I can't find it anywhere. I'm just not sure what's going on.
Well, that's the problem. You can't delete it. You have to uninstall it.
Yeah.
You have to go through their uninstaller, which will uninstall all the pieces of their software. If you've already just dragged it to the recycle bin, it's too late. You'll have to install the Panda software again to get the uninstaller back.
Yeah.
In order to be able to uninstall it properly.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. Folks, in general, we say this over and over again, but it does bear repeating. Do not delete files by simply individual files that you've created, right. But programs, do not just drag them to the trash that does not work. Right, or even the whole folder. You have to use either the Add Remove Programs applet in the control panel, or some of them come with their own uninstall program. Yes. That is the only correct way to uninstall programs.
Because there's
be very careful of them,
especially in antivirus software, they usually have tons of entries in the registry.
Right. Our next caller is Tim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
Peachy.
Okay. Yeah, listen, I had a problem. I got an HP desktop that I'm running XP on, Perfection. And I purchased a Sony CD, music CD, and it came and it's with a warning that you could only make three copies of the music on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it installed some type of software, and I'm not sure what it installed on my computer.
The Sony rootkit problem.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, after I made the three copies, my CD burner died, along with my DVD drive. I don't know if it was just a coincidence. I mean, it wasn't the exact time of the third copy it died.
Yeah,
but
it might be.
It wasn't that week.
Well, there's two things you have to note. One is that this is a rootkit from Sony. It's very dangerous. It can be taken over by hackers.
Really?
The thing that it installed. Yeah, Sony has been sued for this. It's terrible.
Yeah.
You need to go to Sony's website and download the rootkit remover.
Oh, okay.
Steve will find that and put up a link shortly. You're right. It's probably a coincidence that they died. So you're going to have to get that fixed separately. But definitely download that rootkit. We have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
when you wake up.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Our next caller is Mike from Webster, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Look, I'd just like to run two separate computers through one monitor, mouse, and keyboard.
Yeah.
I want to know what might be the best way to go about that, and do they need the same operating system on each one?
No. You can use a KVM switch.
Which
KVM.
Stands for keyboard, video, mouse.
Yeah. Right. And you can hook up, they come in 2 FERS, 4 FERS, 8 FERS, whatever many you want to buy.
Okay.
And you can hook all those machines. Now, you can only run one at a time. That is to say, you have to switch among them.
Okay.
I mean, they can all be running at the same time, but you can only control one at a time.
Okay.
Right.
There's software ones and hardware versions.
I personally like the hardware versions better. They have a mechanical switch.
Yeah.
The software versions are convenient because you type a key on your keyboard and don't have to reach over to the switch.
Right.
The annoying thing is they are limited to specific model computers, and you have to be using the same operating system on each one.
Not always, but generally, yes. Whereas a hardware switch, you do not.
Okay.
Yeah. They're great.
That sounds like the way to go then.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
There you go.
Another way to do it, which is kind of cool, is through VNC. The virtual network computing. There's free programs to allow you to log into another computer on your network. Mm-hmm. So you can actually see both computers on the same screen at the same time.
One in a window.
One in a window.
Oh, okay.
The problem with that is that depending on your network and how it's set up and what programs you're running, it can be very slow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not what I'd be looking for.
No, KVM switch.
KVM switch.
Yep.
There you go.
And they start out pretty cheap. A two-position switch is $30-$40.
Okay.
Although they can get really expensive. We had customers wanting digital monitors, two computers sharing two monitors.
Oh.
Either computer to use one or both monitors. That's an $800 switch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but for what you want to do, not so much. Don't cheap out on the cables, though.
Okay.
Well, actually, that's something to watch out for. Some of the switches don't come with cables. Yeah. You have to buy cables separately.
Right, and if you buy cables, get really good, well-shielded cables.
Well-shielded, yeah.
Usually, with that particular manufacturer, they'll sell you the shields that go with that.
Right.
Okay, as a separate cost or whatever.
Well, or bundled together.
Yeah, you can get them a bundle. Depends.
Take
them
a look
as a bundle.
Take a look at what's going on. I mean, you can find them at the superstores. You can find them at these guys. You can find them online.
Yeah, I've got them.
Okay. All right, our next caller is...
Thank you
very much, Mike. Our next caller is Glenn from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Glenn. What's your question? Glenn, don't hurt yourself.
Are you still there?
Dropped the phone. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
What did you drop the phone on?
I don't want to know. What's your question, Glenn?
I've got some DVDs that I have made, and I'd like to go back and re-edit them. Can I do that?
There's a program called DVDXDV. .com. That specific purpose is to take a DVD and convert it back into a DV, digital video stream, that you can take back into your video editing software.
DVDXDV?
Yep.
Okay.
There's also a couple of newer programs that have been coming out for the podcast world and the iPods that will take a DVD and rip it back into a QuickTime movie to put on your iPod.
DVDXDV or DVDXVD?
DVDXDV for digital video. DVD to digital video. Handbrake is the other big one, specifically designed for iPods. So you do lose some quality because it's recompressing it to fit in an iPod. But the DVDXDV gives you the full DV quality and giant file sizes thereby.
Right.
All right, great.
Cool.
Excellent, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right, a couple other things we want to talk about. There's this Tuesday, March 14th. Is, of course, Microsoft Patch Tuesday. There's at least two big patches coming out, one of which is rated critical. So if you've been waiting up to a month for this critical patch, finally it will be available. There's a critical vulnerability that allows propagation of an internet worm without any user interaction. And the second one is important, which addresses holes in the Windows operating system. So those of you who've been waiting breathlessly to actually get your system updated. There's a malicious software removal kit, which will also be released on that date with updated definitions to get rid of viruses and worms and bots and rootkits and other malware and There's just this and that and the other thing finally coming out on March 14th from Microsoft. So make sure that on that day you do your patching. The earlier the better, because the exploits are already out there. You may already be hit, but at the very least you can do that. And we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Your best bet is to call earlier next week, because we will be back here next week. We will be back here at 11 a.m. We will have Dave Enright. We will have Steve Ray. We will have the great and powerful Rob Linton of Oz running the control board. At least we think he's from Oz. We know he's from somewhere different. But wherever that somewhere is, yes, yes, and they have different signs for things there. And he just waved hello to me in his nice, friendly little way. And we'll be back next week to talk to you about computers and stuff like that. In the meantime, join us in the forums. Lots of good stuff going on in the forums. You can email us from the website. And we'll be back next week with Dave and Steve and Rob and me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.